Welcome to the Women's Vitality Summit, Caring for Yourself, Body, and Soul. This is Dr. Keisha Ewers, and you're joining me for a summit that is for all women of all ages, no matter what stage of life or what you're doing in your life. And I'm excited to interview my next guest. Her name is Autumn Flodmoe-Smith. She's been a health enthusiast her entire life and began her academic career with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a minor in dance. Through self-guided research, she and her husband, Chaz, healed her IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome, with the paleo diet. She then studied with the Institute for the Psychology of Eating to become a certified eating psychology coach at Hawthorne University, where she obtained a master's in holistic nutrition. And in 2013, she founded Paleo Valley with her husband and brother-in-law. And Paleo Valley's mission is to disseminate excellent nutritional information and organic food products with 100 million people worldwide. Autumn's commitment to health reached new heights last year after the birth of their son, Maverick. Welcome to the summit, Autumn. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be a guest, and I can't wait to see where the conversation takes us.
So it's going to start with the word vitality, because the reason I did the summit is because I see a lot of women lacking vitality. And the word vitality, of course, means energy level, passion, zest, and bounce for life. It's the juice. It's the life energy and life force that we have. And I always ask every expert that I'm interviewing what they see, so this is your question to begin, as one of the number one reasons for drained vitality in women of this era.
Oh, such a good question. And something I really, my story speaks to very well. I think what it was for me is definitely a lack of self-understanding. And what I mean by that is just, I think, well, like I said, in my teens, I kind of started out a troubled teen. I had digestive issues, and because of that, I didn't understand the link at that time. But now I had some mental health issues, eating disorder, anxiety, and no one could really cure them. Mainstream medicine didn't offer me any solutions, and so I kind of just learned to manage them in really, really unhealthy ways. And it wasn't until I met my husband, and he's just really in touch with himself. He understands what he needs, his limitations, and he kind of said, no, there's got to be a different way to live. There is a different way to live, and you're not reaching your full potential here. And so when we did find this diet, small dietary tweak that I was so skeptical of in the beginning, kind of just catapulted me into this journey of self-discovery and exploration and kind of just learning about myself and what I needed, and knowing that that changes from moment to moment and day to day, dependent upon your circumstances and your environment, and realized that, yes, we can turn our health around and we can live a vibrant life, but it takes a really deep dive into who you are and what you need, and I think that's where it begins for me.
You know, you said a lot of great, wise things right there. And this is something that I've mentioned in several of the conversations I've had for this summit, is that I have witnessed a lot of women that are out of touch and out of sync with themselves. They're so busy caring for others and being focused and having their radar tuned in to other people, that they're out of sync and out of touch and not even listening, never have listened, and cannot even find how to listen to their own selves. So many women, when I work with them from a sexual standpoint, you know, I'm a sex therapist also, and when I work with women and they say, you know, I haven't had sex with my partner for a year and now it's just totally awkward, then I, you know, I'll say, well, have you gotten into touch with your own self and what brings pleasure to you? And they'll say, well, no, you know, and I see that across the board. Like, I'm not able to dial into myself, but I expect my loved one to do that for me. That's messed up. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. No, and I was the queen of being out of touch. I mean, I was just living in my head, and I think that's so easy to do, not only given our busy world, but like you said, just being a woman and thinking that, okay, prioritizing other people, that's the noble thing. That's the right thing to do. But what it does is you don't understand yourself anymore, and you can't let someone love you if you don't even know what you need. And so, yeah, it just, I found vitality for me is balance, just knowing this is what I have to give and giving freely and openly and with a lot of love, but also knowing, okay, I don't have anything to give right now. This is when I need to receive and be filled back up. So, yeah, it's so common, though, with everyone I work with. It's just a reoccurring theme.
That's a really powerful, you know, what juxtaposition of giving is what you said, that being able to know when it's time to receive. I think that that's so important, and that we don't give ourselves permission to receive, that somehow we're not deserving and worthy of receiving unless we've fulfilled some sort of quota that we have in our heads of caring for others. Only if I care for someone else can I have some sort of little tiny receiving back. Instead of, I am innately worthy and deserving of all the abundance and love that's available in the universe just by being. Just by being who I am. I don't have to achieve. I don't have to do. I don't have to give. And, of course, that's the subtext of this summit, caring for yourself, body, and soul. That your soul knows that. It knows that from the deepest inner recesses, and we forget that in our lives as children. And I think as little girls, we're really reinforced to be caregivers. What a good little girl you took, you know. And so that's when we say, oh, that's how I get attention. That's how I get love. That's how I get respected, is if I'm giving.
Yeah, it wasn't until I became a mom that I fully let that go, and I'm still not great at it. It is a practice for me to receive, but I think motherhood just forced me into that, because you suddenly don't have as much to give. You can't take quite as much on, and you're kind of forced to like be in integrity. And I just wanted to mention a book that really helped me with this process. It just was so beautifully articulated, and that's Immovable Heart, Unstoppable Mind. And they talk about the pattern of avoidance and aggression. It's by David Zappizzotti. And when we avoid our own needs, eventually what happens is they just build up, and we're going to move into a pattern of aggression. So like we were saying, you're just really not doing anyone favors, because those feelings, they're going to come out, and whether it's in this verbal aggression or if it's in a health symptom, but there is going to be an outlet. And so just by keeping yourself authentic and in line with, you know, your deeper desires, you can do wonders for your own health and be respected and loved in a way that you deserve.
Well, and of course, as a medical practitioner, what I see is the aggression towards self, where we internalize and our body begins to attack itself. So many of my patients have autoimmune disease, and they don't even know it when they come and see me. And we do testing and we find out, and I present this to them. And having had autoimmune disease and, you know, a couple decades ago myself and curing it, I know why I was attacking myself now. I've talked about that in my story, but so often women aren't even realizing they're doing that the aggression is turned inward on self, and they don't even have that language that you just so beautifully put to it, that it will be manifested in aggression. And I think that that's really an important concept.
Oh, such an important concept, and so far too common. And I'm so glad for the work that you're doing to bring attention to these issues, because in the women that I work with, you know, they're looking for that vitality, but they're not even thinking about, what am I thinking? Am I loving myself? They're not even checking in with it. So this is really, really important work. And it moves the needle for so many of my women. They just start the process thinking they're going to learn about diet because I work with diet, but then they end knowing so much more about themselves. And that's where lasting health comes from, is that self-understanding and self-love. But so I don't think you can really have sustainable health without it.
Well, of course, every flight attendant and every airplane talks about it. Put your oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on your child. And me being the other-oriented person that I have been my whole life and had to get a grip on and learn for myself. This is a skill you have to learn. The first time before I had children, so the first flight I took, when I heard that instruction, I remember being appalled, horrified, thinking in my head, I would never put the oxygen mask on myself first. This is awful. How, you know? And then actually healing from these ways of thinking, these self-limiting beliefs, these behaviors, and saying, oh, I get it now. If you don't have anything in the well of your heart to dip into, then you're not actually being compassionate when you serve another. It's actually a mercenary thing you're doing. You're giving to get something back. And that's a really fascinating way of thinking about generosity and kindness as a currency rather than an actual gesture of generosity. You know, it's a strategy we created as little girls because that's what was reinforced. And of course, I talk about this. It's from an Enneagram perspective, and I talk about this in another session, but I think that that's a really important distinction. And I want to say, turn back to something that you just said where you talk about nutrition and you end up talking about what motivates you. And so I would love to start with your story of an eating disorder. You kind of breezed right past that, but this is a problem for a lot of women and men. But women, there are many of them with eating disorders, and it's not really a disorder of eating, is it?
It's not. You know, food, our relationship with food is kind of our relationship with life. And it's, food's just a doorway. It's one of those ways that our issues are manifesting themselves because we're not listening. And so, yeah, I did as a teen. I had a strong need to feel control of something. My life just felt like it was out of control, and I suffered in ballerina, so I think that it was kind of an easy place to take hold. But yeah, I really struggled for a number of years, and I can't honestly say, it started, the genesis was kind of my digestive issues, and then I think I was suffering from in pretty severe anxiety, and I'm not sure that that wasn't just what was starting all these other issues, because I went from an eating disorder, and then I started to abuse substances, and I think I was just managing this feeling of being unwell and out of control of my health, basically, I think. And it was really, really hard. And like I said, I didn't even pull myself out of it. They made me feel like a zombie. I talked, work, nothing really seemed I was able to look at my diet. I think my eating disorder was asking me to pay attention. I can't go through life at 100 miles an hour and not listen to my body ever and give always and expect my body just to stand in that effort. It's not sustainable. And so I did have to stop, focus on what was at the genesis of these issues, and it wasn't until then that I feel fully recovered. I feel like I have a more healthy relationship with food than ever, and I'm really grateful for that. I think a good relationship is another really important piece, because my husband is my perfect complement. I am really tons of energy, an emotional spectrum you wouldn't even believe, and he is so centered and calm. So
that's wonderful.
I've just been very blessed. Yeah,
I actually say the same thing about your relationship with sexuality is only a snapshot of your relationship with all of your life too. You know, that these are simple pie chart slices, you know, of a snapshot of your entire life. So if your sex drive is low, then your relationship with that is going to be reflective of where you are with everything else too. And so it's a great way to start and to dive into that, as is relationship with food.
Yes, totally. And I always have my clients ask themselves, if this health symptom were here to teach me something, to what would that be, just to kind of help get their curiosity flowing? Because yeah, it is very rarely about the way it's manifesting itself. It's something else. It's a little more under the surface, and you have to pay attention to yourself to figure it out, which sometimes is hard.
Well, an illustration that you're not a body, you're not a separate mind, you're not a separate heart, and you're not a separate spirit, that you're an integrated system. And we tend to try and tease those out and put them into boxes and specialties and categories in conventional medicine, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work like that. You're an entire being. And so these kinds of symptoms and what we're talking about illustrate that and kind of show it in the mirror for us that you aren't just one part of you. You're an entire whole being.
I found that so remarkable, and that these simple changes in diet could help with all those underlying conditions. I felt like I was just doomed and destined to be troubled, I think, my whole life, because I had such a hard time as a teenager, but it was just a few changes and I was a new person. So yes, everything is related, and if you're having, 10 plus different symptoms, that doesn't mean you'll be stuck on this wheel forever trying to figure them out. They're all connected.
Mm-hmm. The root cause, it's all the roots, and we tend to chase these symptoms, and they're just branches on the tree of the same roots. So let's talk a little bit about the subject of this session is taking some of the junk out of snacks, which I find to be an interesting subject material, because as I give advice to my patients when they come to see me about nutrition and what's showing up for them, I often hear that I don't have time to do the things that you're talking about. I don't have time. I'm on the run. You don't understand, Dr. Keisha. I travel all the time. I'm in airports all the time. Or I'm in a car all the time traveling, for my work. Or I'm running kids around to soccer games and I don't have time. So time is something that I find is talked about a lot. And of course, we do know that if, those of us that eat healthy know that we could stay in the kitchen all day long and chop up things and cook and create really wonderful, wonderful gourmet, fantastic, healthy meals for ourselves and our families. And some people, and you'll find them on the blog world on the internet, have devoted a ton of time to that and shared their journeys and recipes with us. And I'm so grateful for that, because I can just with the click of a button say what I'm in the mood for and put the word paleo before it, and then I've got a healthy option. But I also am very busy, and I've become very efficient in how I feed myself. And so I know that's something that's true for you, and I would love for you to address how can busy women eat well and feed themselves in a healthy manner as well as their families?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, and that's why my husband and I, we started this company, we're thinking, okay, well, we're going to need to inform and educate people, and they just need to know which foods, and then we just said, no, what people really need are really high-quality snack options, because we love whole foods, and we would love it if everyone had the time and desire to sit in the kitchen, like you said, and prepare every meal themselves. It's just not realistic. And so what we went and thought, okay, we're going to find these products, then the products that we feel comfortable eating ourselves, that we want to give to our family, and we searched high and low. And they just didn't really exist according to our standards. And it seemed like no matter how good the intentions were, they were just cutting corners, little corners, and to some people might not matter. But for us, we want to prioritize everyone's health first and foremost. And so we decided we had to create them. And so we got into the products. So we have our line, and it's growing. We have several. We'll talk about the products if you want. We can touch on them later. But that is a big chunk. They're a crutch for me. About every day I have at least one of our products lying around, because you can't live in a little bubble and you can't stay in the safety of your kitchen forever. You're going to have to venture out in the world. It's a big place and there's so many wonderful things to do. And especially as a mom, you just don't even know where life's going to take you. Or if you're a working lady too, same thing. And so having those high quality options, that is the biggest piece of the puzzle for me. But also in my own home, I find these little recipes. I just don't love to linger in the kitchen. Haven't been really comfortable with it. But like you said, so many bloggers these days, I just make a recipe or two, have kind of these staples, probably like 10 recipes that I make pretty consistently, and you just get more and more comfortable, like my little morning acai bowl. But what I also like to do is batch bake. And this is really, really easy, actually. You take a sundae and you have these, like, maybe set aside 20 crock pot meals you're looking for. Just shop one time and then put them all into a freezer bag, and then all of a sudden you have 20 meals that you can pull out and just pop in the crock pot when you just don't have time. And then I also like to just make huge portions so that I always am eating leftovers. And when you plan intelligently throughout the day, or throughout your week rather, take one day and just sit down and make a really, really thorough list of what it is you're going to need. Go to the store one time. It actually doesn't take the time that you thought it did, and especially if you learn a little bit about kitchen skills. That was a big stumbling block for me, too. My mom worked, too. We didn't really spend a lot of time in the kitchen, so I didn't even have these little basics, but they really do save time. They're not that intimidating once you jump in, and you can learn them on YouTube, and that's just what I did. I just learned a few of the most basic kitchen skills, and then I just kind of went for it. And I'm really busy because I have a one-year-old, and I'm also running a company, and I also like to have a good time, and I have some friends, and so I have a very, very busy life, but I don't stray from the diet. I just make really, really smart decisions. Another thing, when you eat really high-quality food, you don't have to eat as much, and you won't have those crazy hunger pangs, and it won't be intolerable or insatiable at all. It's very, very manageable. You'll have to eat less. You can probably go for longer periods of time. So it's actually a really liberating experience in terms of the time commitment, and that's what I found, at least.
You know, I'm a mother of four. My youngest is 19 years old now. And when they were all home and, you know, it was a busy, 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 busy time with raising my children, I did the exact same thing you're talking about. And on top of that, I also created a food co-op where I had some friends that were in the same boat as I was, and we would actually make meals for each other. So, you know, I had 5 friends that would do this. And so that's 6 days a week. You know, I had to cook once a week, and then we'd have leftovers of our meal. And then the other days of the week, I had meals brought to me, you know, so that's a really great way of doing it. If you have some friends that also are passionate about eating a certain way, you can bring them together and create this little food cooperative and just deliver meals once a week and get them delivered, you know, their whole rest of the week. And it was always fun because we sat together and we came up with guidelines about how it's going to look, you know. Today, if I did this today, I would say no sugar, no gluten, no dairy, no soy, nothing processed, you know, and do whole foods and also get the input of everyone else. And we would follow these guidelines for each other. And then we would know that that meal is something safe, and it's kind of exciting to not know what you're going to eat that day until it gets delivered.
Right.
And you didn't have to cook it.
I love
it. I know. It saved
us. I am going
us.
To do that.
It's a really, really great way of doing it. And then I did the same thing where I would just cook giant amounts, and my husband teases me today because I still cook for an army and put it in the freezer, and he says, you know, it's just the two of us now. I say, that still doesn't matter. I still don't want to spend all day in the kitchen. You know, I don't care if it's just the two of us. We still have these leftovers, and I still use the crock pot, and I still make way more than we need so that I don't have to cook later in the week. And so, you know, and I'm very adept at coming home from work and just chopping up a ton of vegetables, throwing them on a roasting pan, putting some olive oil and sea salt, putting them into the under the broiler for 5 minutes, and then voila, we have fresh vegetables plus whatever it was that was in the crock pot for the day or in the soup pot. So it makes it's not as hard as people, if you're going to make gourmet with sauces and things like that and reductions and all of these things that I don't do, then you can spend a lot of time. Or if you're going to have dessert with every meal, or you're going to make some sort of gluten-free or paleo bread to go with your meal, but I don't eat any of those things. So, you know, it's all whole food, so it makes it super easy and very simple and quick to make when I do it with this very intentional strategy that you're talking about. And it's works great.
Yeah, and I just read this book. I just want to give Leanne Ely a little shout-out because I thought her tip was just genius.
She's on the summit.
Oh, she is?
Yep.
Oh, great. Okay. So she taught me that you just make a little salad bar for your fridge. You just, the day that you get your vegetables, you chop up those carrots, you chop up the cucumbers, you chop up the romaine and onion and whatever else you like, and then you put them in individual containers in your fridge. And then throughout the week, just because, you know, your taste preference is going to change, you just throw them in the bowl, and there you have a salad. And then you throw a little protein on it. Bam, it's just done. So I just love that. That saved me a lot of times, too.
Yeah, and another thing that I love is growing my kitchen herbs outside on my deck, where all I have to do is walk out the door, and I can clip them off. I live in Seattle area, so that climate is conducive to that. You might have to grow them indoors if you have really harsh, cold winter times or super blazing, blistering hot summers. You can put them, you know, in a windowsill and have a windowsill herb garden, but, you know, chopping, just going and clipping those and putting them over your vegetables, such a great way of adding spice. So often people will say, you know, this is bland, boring food. And I'll say, well, then you need to get out your spices and your herbs, because that's what adds the pizzazz and the punch to it.
Oh, it's so true. And I just started experimenting or gaining a little confidence in that arena. And I, too, have a little basil on my little porch here, and adding that to salads or whatever. It's crazy how much of a difference it makes. And some mint. I add that to my morning shake. And it's just a different experience entirely. So I fully recommend. Yeah, and you can, basically anyone can grow them, like you said, at your own home. So that's a really simple way to do it, too. I love that.
So you talk a lot about the prevention of anxiety through food, and I would love to have you talk about that.
Yes, that was actually my thesis, because when I took that time to sit down and think about what was at the genesis of my number of issues, I think that was it. It was the anxiety, and it was kind of concurrent with my irritable bowel syndrome, and the literature supports that. There's a lot of people who have digestive issues, have a lot of mental health issues, and so it was a huge, huge area of interest for me. And so I just found, and there's a lot of research supporting this now. Dr. Felice Jacka out of Australia has done some really, really great trials. And this is supported in the literature that traditional diets, kind of paleo-esque, I think a lot of the literature is done actually with the Mediterranean diet, but traditional-esque diets have far better mental health outcomes than do overprocessed diets, and that it's not only that processed foods deteriorate mental health, but that the lack of really high quality nutrient dense foods, that seems to be maybe an even more important predictor. And so what I found in my research was that caffeine, alcohol, GMOs, gluten and sugar, and basically balancing your blood sugar was enough for a lot of people to be able to get rid of their anxiety. And that balancing blood sugar is just such a simple, simple tweak that I want to share with people. Because, and sometimes food sensitivities and, you know, heavy metal exposure, there are other causes of anxiety. But because dietary intervention is risk-free and you can, anyone can do it, it's a really, really nice place to begin. So what you do is I just make sure that the people I work with start their day with high-quality protein, 20 grams, 20 to 30 grams right away in the morning, because I don't think people understand that the blood sugar surges, they can actually create the anxiety. And so keeping that really, really stable right away in the morning will just set you up for a nice, steady, calm hormonal picture, because your blood sugar is tied to your hormones. And so that's a really, really great way in the beginning. And then just trying to have protein or high-quality fat with every meal. And the number one thing that I think surprises most women, everyone knows, yeah, we got to get rid of sugar. Gluten, obviously, I think people are coming around to that idea. That's really associated with anxiety. But the caffeine piece for me was so huge. I would drink green tea because I was working as a fitness trainer, and I thought I needed it because I was working out multiple hours a day. And then I would always come home and collapse into a pile, and my husband would find me crying, and I didn't even know why. And I thought I needed, you know, some sort of medical intervention, but it was just, I was drinking too much caffeine, and when I eliminated it, I didn't feel that way anymore, and I actually had more energy. So my two big tips for that are, yeah, learn to balance that blood sugar, and get the caffeine out of your diet. And you don't have to do it forever. I know people love their coffee, but then you'll know. If you just experiment with it, then you'll have an idea of as to whether or not it's contributing. And also, you got to take care of your gut health. probiotics, I highly, highly recommend.
Before we move into probiotics and fermented food, I want to stay with this for just a couple of minutes because I find this in my practice, and I want to make sure that we make it super, super clear. Food equals mood, everybody. Food equals mood. Kathleen de Maison, who I've interviewed on my Healthy You radio show a couple of times, wrote a great book called Potatoes Not Prozac. That was my first introduction to the detox, retox roller coaster. And the fact that I was a complete addict. I was a sugar addict and didn't know it. But what she went back to school and discovered through her doctoral research was that sugar acts the same as alcohol and cocaine. You know, in fact, there have been studies since then that have been done that show mice will go after cocaine and if it's provided, but they'll go after sugar over cocaine if they have a choice. And so that's a really, really powerful statement right there and scientific finding of the addictive quality of sugar. And our breakfasts in the United States, people tend to expect to be pretty sweet, like orange juice. My gosh, a glass of orange juice has more sugar in it than you should have in your day. And, you know, that it's pretty fascinating to think about the fact that orange juice is the same thing as a candy bar. A banana has as much sugar as a candy bar. Waffles, you know, these people will think they're being healthy when they buy a gluten-free waffle. And so I want to come back to this idea that gluten-free does not mean healthy if you're buying it and it has a label on it and it's in a cardboard package. That means there's more sugar in it.
Yes, exactly.
And no whole grain. So it's really important that you understand this drives your blood sugar for the rest of your day and your mood. And so I think it's a point well taken that you're saying.
Yeah. I know. And I thought, like I said, when I was having that anxiety that, oh my gosh, there's something going on in my life. I just don't know what's making me so upset. But a lot of times, like you said, the biochemistry comes first, that crash. And then you kind of are thinking, okay, well, what's wrong? Well, I don't know. Well, I'll make something up or whatever just happened. That's what's wrong. And you kind of attribute it to what happened most recently. But it is, if you take away and you just feel better. You feel like you can actually find your center. I eat very, very little sugar because I found, I don't know if I burnt out my high protein breakfast, but yeah, not the waffles. And I do the paleo diet, but I don't eat a lot of that gluten-free bread or any of those processed foods. I look for foods that are naturally gluten-free, whole foods. And I even kind of limit my fruit intake to, you know, 2 pieces a day or so because I could go crazy with that. And staying away from dried fruit, fruit juice, absolutely, any sugary sodas, just really being mindful of eliminating processed foods in general, but really being careful about that, your breakfast for sure.
Soda with fake set you sugar off on the substitutes right foot. Also. So you just mentioned something that I, again, want to reiterate. Dried fruit is sugar cubes. So no dried fruit, everybody. It's concentrated sugar. So, yeah.
You can eat 5 apples in a handful, and I used to.
Yeah.
It's not good.
This is something that JJ Virgin covers in her talk, too. So it's really important concept. I want to give an alternative to coffee before we move on. I don't know if you've heard of this, Autumn, but Capomo, C-A-P-O-M-O, is a Maya nut coffee alternative that tastes very much like coffee. It smells like coffee. You brew it just like coffee. And it's very, very satisfying, but it doesn't have the acid and it doesn't have the caffeine in it that coffee has in it. And so we use it in my clinic all the time. You can get it online on Amazon, and it's called Capomo. And people in my practice are wild about it because they get to still have that ritual. Remember, I live in Seattle, which is the land of Starbucks. And so I'm taking people off of sometimes 6 cups of coffee a day and putting them on Capomo.
Oh, wow.
So
Wow, it sounds amazing. And yes, I haven't heard of it, but I'm definitely going to try it. And we have our own little thing that I do. If you're not quite ready to give up that ritual, I mean, it's kind of the same thing, but it's a little bit more downstream for people who love their coffee. And that is just, we take herbal tea, chai herbal tea, and I like to add a little bit of ghee. If you're not familiar with ghee, it's this like deliciously nutty omega fatty acid filled antioxidant bomb. And all we do is we just steep the tea for a while, and then we put it in our little Vitamix, and we stir or actually blend the ghee in until it's foamy, and it kind of gives it like a warm latte feel, like it's a little foamy. And then I can add some cinnamon and nutmeg and the sea salt because I'm experimenting with those spices, and it's really, really delicious alternative as well.
That is, and of course that would be Dave Asprey's bulletproofing, right? So really, really great.
Yeah, with herbal tea.
Right, yeah, you can definitely do that. And Ayurveda is something that we've talked a lot about on the summit with Dr. John Dooliard's talk and John Immels and Dr. Christine Horner. And so I want to just insert right here that not every body type can have a ton of ghee every day. It depends on your, if you're Autumn's body type, which is very, very Vata, then actually a shot of ghee in whatever you're drinking yeah. every morning is so grounding and so good for you. And it will be a great anti-anxiety kind of food. But if you're a kapha body type like me and you add ghee every single day to your hot drink, you're going to gain weight. So I just want to tell you that.
Nice. I love that. So that is your alternative better? Because I think that's my husband too, and I love that you threw Ayurveda in here, and you're right, I'm a Vata. Did you know that just by the energy of from our conversation?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And also, okay. dancers are Vata, you know, like ballerinas are Vata people. You don't see kapha people on a ballet stage. It just doesn't happen.
Well, great. Yeah, I think my husband's a kappa too. But yes, I love that. Yeah, we're all unique and it will work for some and not for others. But
right.
Thank you for adding that.
So you also talk about the quality of red meat and how that is associated with anxiety and depression. And I would love to have you speak to that right now.
Yeah, that was my favorite finding in all my research on anxiety. Dr. Felice Jacka, I mentioned before, she's a researcher out of Australia. And in her dissertation, she went into it because she was a vegetarian thinking, I think like a lot of people do, red meat is not a healthful food and it will most likely be associated with an increase in anxiety and depression. But she found the very opposite. And then in fact, grass-fed red meat, because that's what they're eating in Australia primarily, and that's what the research was done using, is actually the most anxiety-protective food of all. Vegetables, any other food group, it was all about red meat, and that it was in a linear fashion. So it seemed that the more red meat people ate, the less anxiety they were prone to. So that kind of inspired us or made me really excited about creating our beef sticks, because I do think there's a stigma against red meat, but for mental health, it's so important. It's just got that iron, the zinc, the B vitamins. It's such an important and therapeutic food for people who suffer from anxiety and depression. So I really wanted to get that message out there. And she's looking further into the research because she was so surprised about it. So I'm excited to see what her further research will show.
And I'm, again, in John Immel's interview, we talked about from an Ayurvedic standpoint, experiment with the information that you get on nutrition and see how your body responds. But red meat is genetically not for everybody. There's 10% of the population that actually ought to be vegetarian, which is not a very big number. You know, it's so fascinating because when we hear these kind of broad strokes like forks over knives or paleo for everybody, you know, it's so important to understand that we have our own unique genetics and there are ways now to tell what the diet is for your body type. I run a 23andMe panel on most of my patients nowadays, and I've spent 4 years studying genetics, and I can pick out of that if you process red meat well and looking at your ApoE gene, whether or not a paleo diet's right for you or a vegetarian one. And so, again, coming back to that, there's no one-size-fits-all. My genetic type loves red meat. And when I was vegetarian is when I was vegetarian for 20 years, and that's when I got rheumatoid arthritis. I got very sick running marathons and being vegetarian. So not for everybody, you know. And by the same token, my husband has an APOE4 gene in his genetic makeup, and meat's not good for him. So he sticks with fish and vegetables and legumes. And he's one of the 10% that has a lot of Alzheimer's in his family and dementia. And he's turned that gene off by eating in this very specific way for his genetic makeup. So very, very interesting. But 90% of you, you know, this is really important. Paleo is a great way to go for 90% of our population. That's a big number.
That's a huge number, and I just want to say it's exactly the same in our house. My husband loves the red meat, can tolerate it really well. It took me a while to come around. I had all of these biases against it. In the beginning, I think I had low levels of hydrochloric acid, so I didn't digest it particularly well. But once I kind of addressed that issue, and I do eat it, but not in huge amounts, just, you know, a few times, like 2 or 3 times a week. So, yes, that's definitely been my experience, too.
So you've got these amazing B6. Oh, my gosh. They're grass-fed. They don't have anything, you know, genetically modified, non-organic. They taste so good. And I was introduced to them just before I went on an international trip to Bali, and they became a big part of my airplane food. And I just want to give you feedback. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic snack. So I would love... Beyond these amazing Paleo Valley beef sticks that are really, you know, grass-fed, red meat, wonderful, what are some other snack ideas that you can talk to our listeners about that are high quality?
The other snack ideas, well, we're working on more. We have some superfood bars coming out that are, the goal was to make them really, really low in sugar. And then everyone was kind of focused on taking out those buzzwords, like I said before, gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, et cetera, but then not necessarily worrying about what was left and if there are nutrients in there, because we're also nutrient deficient. This is a big deal, right? It's
That's
true.
It.
You're kind of eating this
skeleton. Soy-free, dairy-free, and nutrient-free.
Exactly.
Good
so,
point.
It was a real issue. So we've created bars with some chlorella and spirulina and ginger and collagen and coconut oil and coconut butter, and that this still tastes amazing with 3 grams of sugar. And that's a big issue. Like you said, a lot of people aren't even tuned into this counting the sugar grams. That's also a really, really great tip for people. Just start tuning yourselves. If you're going to eat processed foods or even companies who are doing things well, but start attuning yourselves to those numbers on that in the sugar grams, and that will be a really, really powerful tip as well. But so we're creating those for sure, as well as a meal replacement. My other go-to snacks, I love egg muffins. I just made
out
a lot of them the
Autumn.
Other week.
Autumn, you're cutting out.
Yeah.
So I heard I love and then nothing else. So repeat what you just said.
Okay, I'm sorry. I love to make egg muffins, and just in the beginning of the week, like an omelet, put them in the tin. Also loved deviled eggs. I love to take avocado and slice it and put some pumpkin seeds on there. They're not as transportable, but that's exactly why we did the beef sticks and the bars that you eat everywhere. Those are my go-to snacks. I don't really have a lot of other ones that I can eat even on the market, because I do tend to have that intolerance to a lot of carbohydrates, and it's really hard to find that area. That's where we had to make them.
Well, what I do, in addition to, you know, taking along the healthy options that you just talked about, is whenever I go on a flight that's any more than 2 hours, I actually roast a whole bunch of vegetables and then put them in a container and take them with me. You can take homemade food on the plane with you as long as it's not liquid. And so I'll cut up a bunch of broccoli, a few carrots and some cauliflower on a pan, and maybe even a sweet potato, and then some olive oil and sea salt, roast them with a broiler, and then let them cool down a bit, and then stick them in a container. And then I pull those out in my flight and I eat those. Another great idea is, free-range rotisserie chicken that doesn't have anything added to it that I get one at my local food co-op, and I'll debone that and put the meat in a baggie, and I'll take that with me along with my vegetables. And oftentimes that'll last me three different meals if I take enough with me. So an international flight that lasts for 30 hours, you know, that with a bag of pumpkin seeds and some sunflower seeds, I'm good. You know, I don't have to eat what they're serving on the plane or in the airport. And so I don't think people realize they can take a full meal on the plane with you. You don't necessarily have to be trapped with whatever is available through the airline or the airport.
Yeah, I don't think I even realize that, and it's something that I've done, but that is something I will do. That is such a great idea. I always kind of use it as, okay, well, I'm just going to give my digestive system a break here, but 30 hours, that's different. That's not as easily done.
Bali, Africa, I take people over on those trips, and, you know, that's a long time. So, you know, when you take good, healthy food, it also makes it so that you don't get so jet lagged. Stay away from the alcohol, stay away from the caffeine, stay away from the processed food that they serve you, and you're going to actually arrive to your destination in a much better frame of energy and mind than you do if you don't do that. So I also take protein powder. I have a paleo protein powder that we carry in a baggie with a scoop and an empty water bottle, and I'll just ask for water in my bottle and add some protein powder to that and shake it up, and I can have that, and that's a very quick and easy protein that can go with my vegetables.
Yes, that's great. And that's something I do, too, that I've forgotten. That is, that saved me a lot of times.
For sure. All right, so I would love for you to share what do you see as the crap in snacks that are hidden, that people don't realize that they're consuming?
Oh, my goodness. This is such a big topic, and I'm just going to speak to the one that is my most recent experience, and that was when we started off and we created our flagship product, our grass-fed beef sticks, we the first iteration, we thought we were doing everything right, and we were, and on the label you'd find lactic acid or citric acid, and we assumed, you know, oh, that's made from citrus or some fruit, that sounds really, really healthy. And when we looked into it, it was actually really shocking because encapsulated citric acid is a process where they grow the citric acid a lot of times on mold, on GMO corn, and then they encapsulate it in hydrogenated oils, which is trans fat. So these beef sticks on the market that say lactic acid or citric acid, they're likely also containing GMOs and these hydrogenated oils, which are just devastating to your health. And so that's lurking in pretty much every shelf-stable meat product out there, except for ours, because we chose, well, we have to do this better. We have, you know, we higher standards than this. So we decided to ferment ours, and nobody wanted to do it. I think we called hundreds of processors, and because it takes four times as long. But we found someone willing to do it, and he's been with us ever since. And it doesn't only eliminate those nasty ingredients, but it also yields probiotics, a billion probiotics per stick. So it's a nice thing. But aside from that, yeah, I found almost all food manufacturers, they have great products, but then they're cutting corners somewhere. A lot of hidden sugar and those natural flavors. You can have MSG if it says natural flavors. That's another big one. Mm-hmm. So just being very careful. And watching organic ingredients is so important, because you can have certain ingredients be organic and others not. And inorganic ingredients can do a number on the microbiome. So just really, really focusing when you're choosing these options, because it's easy just to look at them. I did this last night. I just grabbed something and said organic, and I didn't look carefully enough, and then I ended up eating a bunch of cane sugar. But, yeah, just being mindful and watching out for natural flavors, lactic acid, citric acid, some of those sneaky little terms that can get your tummy in trouble.
Great tips. Thank you, Adam. We are out of time, and I want to thank you for sharing just a tiny little bit of your wisdom in this short amount of time with our summit participants, and really appreciate what you're up to in the world and these fabulous Paleo Valley beef sticks.
Well, thank you. It was an honor to be your guest.
Remember, everybody.
Thank you for the work you're doing.
Oh, thanks. Remember, everybody, to live, love, laugh, keep on learning, and be the most fabulous version of yourself. Until next time.